I'm Bob Crawford, and as always, joined by Dr. Ben Sawyer.
Hello.
Ben, are you done with your classes? Are y'all done for the semester?
I am done with the classes. I am currently grading. I have a few more papers left to grade and part of the final exam, and then it's home free Christmas time, 100% for the next week.
You know, if I were you, I'd be tempted to just give everyone an A, or maybe just a C. Everybody gets a C. And then you're done.
The semester's been great. I got a lot of really great students. I was able to work with some great students on Fulbright applications and job applications. It's a great job. I really can't believe that my job is just to get to spend time with people who are trying to make themselves better and help them with that.
Well, Ben, you do it so well.
Thank you, man.
So well. Well, today we are getting in the holiday spirit.
That's right. That's right. We have a history of Christmas for you today.
Yeah. James Cooper from the website whychristmas.com. Actually, we spoke with our producer, Ian. We were like, we want to do a history of Santa Claus. And he's like, I found a guy. And this guy is brilliant. He's a historian of Christmas and culture.
Yeah.
And he literally blew my mind.
Yeah, Ian didn't find a guy. Ian found the guy to do this episode.
So we'd like y'all to put on your favorite ugly Christmas sweater, pour yourself a nice glass of eggnog, sit by the fire, eat some cookies, and listen to this episode.
That's right. And while you're thinking about your last minute Christmas shopping, we'd like to remind you that our merchandise, our shirts and our hats and our mugs are up for sale right now. They'll be up for sale until the 21st. And we're hoping to get them to everybody by Christmas. So this is your last shot. We're gonna take all the orders, produce them all at once, and send them out. And thank you to everyone who's ordered them. And we hope that they keep you warm and happy through the holiday season.
We sent a bunch off to the North Pole last week. So I'm sure Santa's putting them on the sleigh as we speak.
Our friend Dolphus Ramser was born and raised in Concord, North Carolina, a town so rich with history that it provided the inspiration for his independent record label and management company. So great was the city's influence on Ramser that he continues to live and work in Concord today. With a full-time staff located in both North Carolina and California, he and his team always put their clients' music first, work as hard as they can, and have fun along the way. Visit Ramser.com to learn more.
James Cooper, welcome to The Road to Now.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you on because you are an expert on the history of Christmas, the history of Santa Claus, and all things cultural. And you are joining us from the other side, not the other side of the planet, but pretty far away. Where are you at, James?
I live in southwest England in a little seaside town called Minehead.
And Santa Claus makes it there, huh?
He does, yes. Yep.
It's everywhere. It's amazing.
Ben, he makes it everywhere. I don't know what your problem is.
Yeah, well, I just a little picking on the English guy, you know, I gotta do a little bit of that, or I'm not a real American.
We're cousins, right? We are Anglo brothers and sisters, right? We're cousins, Americans and English.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we share the same Santa Claus, which is beautiful. Now, we wanted to start off because here we have this phenomenon, and it's one of the things that all over the world, people are united. Whatever their cultures, whatever their nationality, they have some origins of a Christmas myth that is separate from the actual religious aspect of the holiday. Could you start off by telling us the origins of the notion of Santa Claus?
Okay. Well, Santa Claus started back as St. Nicholas, and he was a bishop in 4th century Asia Minor, which we now call Turkey. He was an orphaned at an early age, but came from a rich family. So he inherited lots of money as a child and grew up a Christian and was known as he grew into as a man to be very generous, very kind, lots of gift giving to people that didn't have lots of money. Daughter of the father thought, something's up here. So he kept, the legend goes that he stayed up every night for a year to see who was doing this. And then he caught St. Nicholas doing it. And of course, this was a great thing. And everybody found out about how wonderful St. Nicholas was.
Wow. And that makes me mad that when I was a kid, I was asking for toys when I could have been asking for a stocking full of gold.
Yeah.
So then how did the myth, the folklore carry on and expand?
Well, yeah, I mean, as he got older, there were more stories about him that came to pass. I mean, the Council of Nicaea, which was the famous religious convention where the sort of the books of the Bible were basically decided. He was a person at the Council of Nicaea. He's recorded at the Council of Nicaea. And the most famous thing about him being there is that he actually punched a heretic.
What?
Yeah.
like a Gnostic or a...
It was one of the followers of Arius who denied the divinity of Christ. Apparently they got into a rather heated thing, and he was meant to have got up and punched him in the face. And he was supposedly chucked out of his bishophood for a couple of years until there was such a clamour, because everybody loved him so much, that they had to reinstate him. So yes, Santa has attitude.
Yes.
And then other stories during the Middle Ages got told of him rescuing sailors at sea, which is why he's the patron saint of sailors, prostitutes and children, which is really quite a unique combination.
Yeah, it is.
And then another story came to pass that he saved boys that had been killed and butchered by a landlord of a pub and were sitting in a pickling barrel of brine to sell to his customers as meat, and St. Nicholas is meant to have rescued these boys and put them back together and brought them back to life. So sort of during the Middle Ages, he sort of became very popular as a sort of mythical do-gooder. And his fame really spread into sort of Northern Europe, where he's still known as Sinterklaas. And then when German and Dutch and the British went over to the States, they took the stories of Sinterklaas, and St. Nicholas turned into Sinterklaas, turned into Santa Claus.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So then the feast, the gift giving, does it all come from St. Nicholas, or were there other influences that kind of give us this the Christmas that we've known for the past 150 years?
Well, I mean, back in the winter solstice festivals, especially the Roman festival of Saturnalia, there was a gift-giving element at the end of that festival. So that was another midwinter gift-giving time. And also in some Norse customs, you had Odin, who turned into sort of an old man Christmas figure during the Middle Ages, that you sort of could placate with gifts. You actually gave him gifts to stop him bringing too much snow and coldness to you. So all of those sort of combined with the stories of St. Nicholas, and also then the Christmas story with the Magi bringing the presents to Jesus, it all sort of came together as a midwinter Christmassy gift-giving thing.
That explains the origins of Christmas being when we celebrate it, right? Because it doesn't necessarily line up with when we would imagine Jesus's birth was, but we have it about the same time, really, all over at least the world that celebrates it.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus was probably born in sort of September, October. That's where the thinking lies now, at the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles. But back to 200 AD, there's records of the early church celebrating Jesus' birthday on the 25th of December.
Wow.
Which actually comes from the 25th of March, because back then, that's when they thought that he'd died. They thought that was his death date, was the 25th of March. And certainly in early times like that, great leaders and prophets were meant to have been born or conceived on the same day that they died. So the birth of Jesus was originally celebrated on the 25th of March. And then that switched to the conception of Jesus, bumped 9 months on to the 25th of March, and you get the 25th of December, which lines up nicely as a Christian festival that you can take over all the existing pagan midwinter ones.
I just wanted to say that James is blowing my mind.
I love it when somebody knows this much stuff and it's just like, I know nothing about it. It's awesome.
And then it all makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
It all makes sense.
Because the conglomeration of, it's the Romans, right? The Romans take Christianity into particularly the British Isles, right? Where there are festivals that celebrate the equinox, right?
Yeah. I mean, all over Northern Europe, sort of from Italy up to Finland, you had winter solstice festivals. Italy, it was in the Romans, it was Saturnalia, which of course covered a lot of Europe by that time. And you had Yule up in Scandinavia and Finland and the east, sorry, the western bits of Russia.
So the Yule log.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, because the Yule log was originally bought in to keep your house nice and warm over winter. But in the Middle Ages, when the 12 days of Christmas were big feasting times and you weren't legally allowed to work in England at that time, you were meant to bring in a Yule log so big that it could burn for 12 days solid.
That's huge.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where we get the Yule from. And up in Finland and Sweden, they had the Yule goat was sort of the good luck midwinter festival symbol over there. And in parts of Finland and Sweden, the name for Santa actually means old Christmas goat. Because the goat was the gift giver way back when, 1500, 2000 years ago. But then when St. Nicholas took over the job, they just kept the old name. And in the city, if you really want a good one, in the city of Galva in Sweden, I think that's how you say it, they erect a massive straw goat every year. And it's got its own Twitter account and webcam. It's traditionally that some drunk people normally set fire to it fairly early in the proceedings, but they're actually doing a really good job of protecting it this year. Last year, it lasted 2 days. It's been up about a fortnight, so this week.
Is there an old goat cam like that we can go on online?
Yeah, you can. You can watch it live now.
What?
Oh my! We need to put that link on the website.
What's the website? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, I can tell you. Let me go and find its Twitter, because and the goat sends out hilarious tweets throughout the day as well.
He should be friends with Roy
Moore's
horse.
Like, hey, come and look, I got my horns fixed last night because they weren't glowing enough and things like that.
I'll tell you, when I receive a gift I like this year, I'm going to say, you old goat, you.
Oh, no. I'm going to have to cancel your Christmas present,
if you
Bob.
Just, if you Google, it's G-A-V-L-E, which is the name of the town, G-A-V-L-E, Bokken. So it's the Gavla Bokken, which means the Gavla goat.
That's great. When the goat was delivering Christmas presents, it was like there were limited things you could ask for. You could be like, milk or cheese. Or just to have some old tin destroyed and eaten.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been a good threat. I like to threaten my children. The past couple of weeks has been coal. Like that Santa would bring coal. Where's that come from?
Okay. In lots of Europe, St. Nicholas is accompanied by an assistant or few. And quite often they're known as the Black Peters. And that's sort of got into some sort of political correctness because it is white people blacked up. But the thought is that historically it actually goes back to representing chimney sweeps and devils, not actually black people, but still it's quite sensitive now. And the black peters keep a record and will either beat you with birch twigs or give you lumps of coal. And if you're in parts of Germany and Austria, you might have seen that there was last Christmas there was a horror film that came out called The Krampus.
Yes,
The Krampus accompanies St. Nicholas in bits of Germany, Austria, some of the Slovakian countries as well. And he's basically half man, half goat, half giant monster who comes and kidnaps children and takes them off in a sack.
Well, that's Black Pete in Belgium as well, right? Isn't it? Because I do a game show called Perfect Timing. And the last one we did categories on Santa around the world. And the one that I had read was that in Belgium, that if you're bad, apparently they think that Santa Claus lives in Spain. And if you're bad, he puts you in a, like they'll put you in a sack and take you back to Spain.
Yeah, the Black Peters will put you in a sack and haul you off to Madrid for a year. Yeah.
Which, you know, might not be so bad.
And they think that St. Nicholas lives in Spain because the Netherlands used to be a Spanish colony.
Oh, really? That's why?
And there's still a line in the national anthem of the Netherlands, which says, "Hail to the King of Spain." I mean, yeah.
So that's a good thing that he lives in Spain. It's not like they're like, yeah, it's basically like the North Pole to us.
Yeah.
So what about the tree?
Okay, now the tree, yes. It again, back to Saturnalia. People used to decorate their houses with pine branches during Saturnalia. And people used to bring in greenery all through Northern Europe during the midwinter time. One, to sort of spruce the place up, ha ha ha, and make it look pretty. But it's also been shown that some things like fir trees have actually got, they give off chemicals that are anti-insecticides. So it actually stops the fleas and the mites getting you too much over winter when it's all, you know, lots of people in a house for a long time.
I have noticed that I've been bit by far fewer fleas and mites since we brought a Christmas tree in. So that's
well, there you go. Yeah. Proof. So the tree itself dates back to 1400, 1500 as a thing. There used to be medieval plays that told the story from the Garden of Eden all the way through to Jesus's crucifixion and resurrection. And they either happened at Easter or Christmas. And part of the Garden of Eden, you'd have a thing called a paradise tree. It was basically like a giant triangle of wood with fruit hammered onto it. And then after the Reformation, the story goes that Martin Luther was wandering around through the forest one day and thought, oh, this is all pretty, looking up at the stars through the trees and they go twinkle, twinkle. Why don't I cut a tree down and put candles on it to represent the stars of heaven? So that's one theory of a Christmas tree. The first public Christmas tree, there's a very large argument between Estonia and Latvia as to who had the first public Christmas tree. Because they both got records from sort of the late 1400s, early 1500s of erecting a tree with things on it in the town square. Basically, it was like a early sort of version of the Rotary organisation that sort of, because back then, what's Germany, Latvia and Estonia were all part of the same empire. So these clubs erected trees in their outside their sort of houses in the town square. And then it became more popular in Germany to bring a tree into the house in the late Middle Ages. But it didn't really kick off, especially in the UK and USA, until there was a picture of Prince Albert, Queen Victoria's husband. An illustration was printed, I think it was 1847, in the UK. And lots of people thought, oh, we're going to copy the royals, let's get a Christmas tree sort of thing. And then it was published a couple of years later in the States. But to make it more American, this is an early version of Photoshopping. They took Prince Victoria's crown off and they airbrushed Albert's moustache out of the picture to make it more commercial in America. So that's where the trees come from.
That's nuts.
You know, we had a question for you from one of our listeners.
That's right. We went out and we asked for some questions from our Patreon listeners. And we got two good ones from Tim and Caitlin Wells. Actually, Tim is one of my oldest friends. And I'm happy to answer him because he asked a question that my wife asked just the night before, which is this. Why is it, do you know, that Americans say Merry Christmas and British people say Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Yeah, I'm a happy Christmaser. That is a very good question. And there is a lot of merrying over here as well. And in fact, merrying in the UK is older than happying.
Aha.
The first Merry Christmas was recorded in 1834 when John Fisher, an English Catholic bishop, wrote a Christmas letter to Thomas Cromwell and said, "And this our Lord God send you a Merry Christmas and a comfortable to your heart's desire." And there's also the old God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen carol, which dates back to the 16th century England. So, yeah, I think it became more of a happy thing than a merry thing, really, the late Victorian times. Although there's lots of Merry Christmases, there's 21 Merry Christmases in A Christmas Carol.
Aha.
And the first Christmas card had a Merry Christmas on it in 1843, and that came from the UK as well. So I really don't know why. I think it's the late Victorian times when being merry became more associated with possibly having one too many brandies.
That's great. I mean, it's like, I think as Americans, we think that British tradition is older. So we would, I mean, I think our instinct would say Merry Christmas is something that we did to change it. You know, after the revolution, we change a lot of words and the way we say things. But you're saying that actually we're doing the older thing and that Happy Christmas is an evolution in the UK.
I think so, yeah.
There you go. The second question we had from our Patreon listeners, from Caitlin Wells, was is the custom in England, is there a custom to go outside and take a walk outside no matter what the weather is? And if so, what are the origins of that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people that I know after Christmas dinner, because, I mean, I don't know when you have your main Christmas meal. It's very traditional in the UK to have it on Christmas Day itself, either sort of 1 p.m. or 3 p.m. Most of the rest of Europe has it on Christmas Eve night. And you spend Christmas Day recovering from Christmas Eve. But I think over here, it's sort of, oh, let's go and have a bracing walk after our Christmas dinner to make room for a few mince pies. You know, that's the sort of attitude. I mean, I know of some people that do it, but I'm not one of them.
Aha. You're breaking with tradition, huh?
What about Christmas music? I mean, the songs, right? When did they start to come around? I mean, I believe Silent Night is pretty old. You mentioned God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. When did these songs kind of begin to be conceived?
I mean, some of them come from the 16th century, the 17th century. Most of the ones we have as we know them today really date from the 1840s, 1850s. When some Victorian gentlemen collected lots of folk tunes and folk songs and sort of reinvented the Christmas carol as a thing.
So from everything you've told us, it seems like the 1830s, 1840s was this time of Christmas consolidation.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Christmas that we know today, that's where the origin seemed to lie.
Yes, 1843 is the really big year, because in 1843, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens came out. The first Christmas card was sent, and Christmas crackers were invented. But you in the States don't know of Christmas crackers very much.
We do not, no. Tell us, please.
Christmas crackers are a wonderful thing that Americans are so missing out on. They are a thing that you have, everybody has one on the Christmas table next to your plate, and either before the meal or generally between the main course and dessert. You pull your Christmas cracker, and a Christmas cracker is a thing about a foot long that's in three sections with a sort of a solid bit in the middle that is traditionally made from the inside of a TP roll, and then with two flappy bits on the end. And inside the middle, you pull it and it goes bang, hence the name crack, crackers. And inside it is a paper crown that you have to wear on your head while you're eating pudding and look stupid. A generally grotty plastic toy, and a terrible joke.
Wait, so you...
can we order Christmas crackers
online? You can, yeah, yeah.
So wait, yeah. So there's a joke on the inside of it. You have to tell
a bit of paper falls out. Yeah, and they I mean, these started in Victorian times. It was a guy called Tom Smith, and his family are still like the brand of the most famous crackers is Tom Smith's crackers. He was a sweet seller in England and went over to France and saw how they were marketing their sweets, wrapping them up in little things with two little dangly ends, and thought, hey, I can do that and sell more sweets more expensively. So he did that. And then over the years, more and more stuff got put in them. And then the legend goes he was sitting next to the fire one night and the log fire went crackle as it does. And he thought, oh, I wonder if I can make it so it's I put a small explosive in my sweets. So it's more exciting when people open them.
Well, of course.
Yeah, as you would. And back then, the jokes were sort of much more sort of pious Victorian homilies about being good to your neighbour and such like. But by the 20s and the 30s over here, they just degenerated into appalling joke.
Can you think of one?
Oh, yeah. I've got on my site. I have a massive page of the worst Christmas jokes I could find.
You know, Ben is a stand up comedian. Speaking of the worst jokes you could find.
I don't want to hear
this
from
one
you,
was actually sent in by a school child to me the other day, and I absolutely laughed out loud when I read it, which is, why was the snowman rummaging in a bag?
Why?
He was picking his nose.
Very nice. Okay, let's keep going. Next joke.
Where do elves go to dance?
I don't know.
Where Christmas do elves go to dance?
Christmas balls?
Yeah.
Oh.
Why? How long do reindeer's legs have to be?
I don't know.
Long enough so they can touch the ground.
Oh, no.
One more. We got time for one more.
How does good King Wenceslas like his pizzas?
Oh, I don't know.
Deep pan, crisp pan, even.
What?
Very nice. Wah.
I can't wait for the next episode.
Oh, James,
Mike.
This is great. This is my favorite interview ever, I think it is.
Can you tell us from around the world, you know, there are all these different traditions. Like, what is the one to you that seems the most, you know, just insane?
Okay, well, Japan is a good one. You go to Japan, your main Christmas meal, KFC.
Right.
Because there's sort of no history of Christianity over in Japan. So Christmas has only been a thing sort of since the 60s, 70s, when the American GIs were there following World War II. The GIs wanted some turkey or some chicken over Christmas, and they couldn't find anything, especially not fried chicken. So they basically begged KFC to go and open some stores in Japan. And never wanting to miss a marketing opportunity, in 1974, KFC went into a massive campaign in Japan with the slogan Kentucky for Christmas, which of course stands for KFC.
Ah.
So it seemed much more like Valentine's Day over in Japan. You go for a romantic walk with your family and friends, looking at all the pretty Christmas lights, and then you queue around the block to pick up your pre-ordered bucket of chicken.
What, is Colonel Sanders their Santa Claus?
Oh, yeah.
What?
They have Old Christmas Man, but which is what they call their version of Santa. But basically, you will see Colonel Sanders with a Santa hat on lots of places.
I just imagine there was a Christmas branding committee in Japan in the 70s, and they're like, well, what are we going to call him? Old Christmas Man.
Yeah.
Brilliant. What do you think,
and,
robot?
And Japanese Christmas cake. If you've got a smartphone, you've got some Japanese Christmas cake in your pocket. Because the shortcake emoji, which is the bit that looks like a sponge cake with a big bit of cream in the middle and a strawberry on the top, that's Japanese Christmas cake.
Wow.
The other good country is got to be Catalonia in Spain. You know, you have your nativity scenes, you have Mary, Joseph, Jesus, the shepherds, the wise men. Catalonia, they have a very special figure known as the Pupa.
The Pupa?
Yeah. It's a peasant.
Is it the grand Pupa?
Well, no, it's a picture, it's a little figure of a peasant with his trousers around his ankles doing something.
What? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. And they bring out new ones every year with, like, politicians' faces on it.
Oh.
So they're like figures of fun.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. And the other wonderful things that Catalonians, and they like poop over there, because they also have the pooping log, which is like the Catalonian kids' version of a advent calendar. You have a little hollowed out log which stands on two little legs at the front with some googly eyes and a smiley face and a red hat on. And it has a blanket placed over its bottom. And then every day the parents feed it some sweets and fruits and nuts and stuff. And then on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, the kids dance around the pooping log, singing it a special song, and then smack it with some sticks, and it poops out all of the goodies that have been growing in its bottom during Advent. And then, but when you find the garlic, that's all the sweets done.
Wow.
Wow.
The look on Bob's face right now is golden. It's golden.
Well, let's take this into the 20th century. Americanized Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
James, what were the first Christmas movies and what are some of your favorites?
Okay. Probably the first Christmas, it's not really a movie, but when I was growing up over here in 1983, there was a half hour cartoon. I don't know if you've seen it on public TV or over there or anything, called The Snowman, which is a little story of a snowman that comes to life one night and the boy that built it go off and fly and have adventures together. And that was sort of religiously shown in my school on the day before we broke up for the Christmas holidays. So that's sort of an early one for me. My favorite Christmas film by a country mile, The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, that one's great.
Because it is the most accurate version ever made.
Now, James, have you ever seen the, or either of you guys seen the Star Wars holiday special from 1977?
Oh, yeah, that's something different, I think we'll call that.
It is terrible. I implore everyone listening to, under no circumstances, watch that video. It's on YouTube. Do not go watch that video. Just to summarize, the first 11 minutes of that video is just a Chewbacca's family of Wookiees roaring at each other. It stars B. Arthur. Princess Leia sings the Christmas theme song at the end with words they just made up. Han Solo is clearly phoning it in. And I believe George Lucas was quoted as saying something like, I wish if I had the time, I would go and destroy every single copy of that. And another quote saying, you know, some things you just do in life, you have to live with. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
So don't go watch it. That's what I'm saying.
James, how did you get into all this?
Right. Okay. Well, I've always been a bit of a big kid and I love Christmas. I started the site back in 2000 for a local elementary school to me. Some of the teachers knew I was starting to do web stuff and came to me and said, James, why can't we find a child safe and friendly site that we can leave the kids on to learn about Christmas customs that isn't trying to sell them something?
Right.
Because back then it was the likes of Disney and Nickelodeon sort of had all of the big kids sites, and obviously they were trying to flog their stuff. So I thought, hey, that'll be fun to make. So I made a little site for one school and it got a few hundred hits the first year, and over the 17 years I've run it, it's just grown and grown and grown into the wonderful thing that it is today.
That's good. So tell us about it. Where can everyone go to get your site to find out more about what
okay.
you do?
You can go to www.whychristmas.com, which is whychristmas.com, and you can find out pretty much everything about Christmas.
It's amazing how you start off doing something for small, you know, for local audiences, and at that time in 2000 it was like, who knew how to make a website?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still my day job today.
Brilliant.
We're so glad that you took some time to join us to help celebrate the holiday. James, we wish you a happy and Merry Christmas.
That's right.
Well, and a happy and Merry Christmas to you too very much. And thank you very much for having me. It's been brilliant.
Likewise, sir.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. The Road to Now is hosted by Bob Crawford and Benjamin Sawyer and produced by Bob Crawford, Ben Sawyer, and Ian Scotta. Our associate editor is Megan Summers. Today's music is by Paul DeFiglia. We'd like to say a special thanks to our supporters on Patreon, with a special shout out to our Washingtonians: Eric King, Tanya Marsh, Mary Hawking, Paul Ayler, Tim and Caitlin Wells, Christopher Willis, Peggy Donica, Fig White, and Jeff LeCain. If you like what you're hearing, please take a minute and rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get The Road to Now. It only takes a second and it does a lot to help us spread the word. For Bob Crawford, this is Dr. Benjamin Sawyer. Take care.